Norman Bowker's letter hit me hard. For years, I'd felt a certain smugness about how easily I'd made the shift from war to peace. A nice, smooth glide, no flashbacks or midnight sweats. The war was over, after all, and the thing to do was go on. So I took pride in sliding gracefully from Vietnam to graduate school. From Chu Lai to Harvard, from one world to another. In ordinary conversation, I never spoke much about the war, certainly not in detail. And yet ever since my return, I'd been talking about it virtually nonstop through my writing. Telling stories seemed a natural, inevitable process, like clearing the throat. Partly catharsis, partly communication. It was a way of grabbing people by the shirt and explaining exactly what had happened to me, how I'd allowed myself to get dragged into a wrong war, all the mistakes I'd made, all the terrible things I'd seen and done. I didn't look on my work as therapy, and still don't. Yet when I received Norman Bowker's letter, it occurred to me that the act of writing had led me through a swirl of memories that might otherwise have ended in paralysis or worse. By telling stories, you objectify your own experience. You separate it from yourself. You pin down certain truths. You make up others. You start sometimes with an incident that truly happened, like the night in the shit field, and you carry it forward by inventing incidents that didn't in fact occur, but that nevertheless help to clarify and explain. In any case, Norman Bowker's letter had an effect. It haunted me for more than a month. Not the words so much as its desperation. And I resolved, finally, to take him up on his story suggestion. At the time, I was at work on a new novel, going after Cacciato, and one morning I sat down and began a chapter titled Speaking of Courage. The emotional core came directly from Bowker's letter, the simple need to talk. To provide a dramatic frame, I collapsed events into a single time and place. A car circling a lake on a quiet afternoon in midsummer, using the lake as a nucleus around which the story would orbit. As he requested, I didn't use Norman Bowker's name, instead substituting the name of my novel's main character, Paul Berlin. For the scenery, I borrowed heavily from my own hometown, wholesale thievery, in fact. I lifted up Worthington, Minnesota, the lake, the road, the causeway, the woman in pedal pushers, the junior college, the handsome houses and docks and boats and public parks, and carried it all a few hundred miles south and transplanted it onto the Iowa prairie. The writing went quickly and easily. I drafted the piece in a week or two, fiddled with it for another week, then published it as a separate short story. Almost immediately, though, there was a sense of failure. The details of Norman Bowker's story were missing. In this original version, which I still conceived as part of the novel, I'd been forced to omit the shit field and the rain and the death of Kiowa, replacing this material with events that better fit the book's narrative. As a consequence, I'd lost the natural counterpoint between the lake and the field. A metaphoric unity was broken. What the piece needed and didn't have was the terrible killing power of that shit field.